This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And, a little bit late because Don was talking to my next guest, and he, this put us a little bit over, but we're going to be fine. I wasn't on the air last week because I was at the INES conference in Orlando. That's the International New Age Trade Show. So I'm starting to travel again, but every time I'm not here, he will always dig into the archives and put another show on. Before we get going, let me go ahead and give out the toll-free number in case anybody does want to call in. The number here is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And that number is good all over the world if anyone wants to come in. But people keep telling me they don't want to call in. They just rather just listen. So I have a very special guest tonight, and he's someone who said he doesn't do very many radio shows anymore except his own. So I'm very honored to have him here tonight. It's Gordon Michael Scallion, and I know many people out there will know who he is. Hi, Gordon. Are you there?
I'm here, Dolores. Happy to be here.
Oh, Happy New Year. Okay, well, you got some of that snow up there?
No, we've had the mildest winter. We've had only one storm, and it only was a matter of about an inch. And this is very unusual for New England.
Oh, I thought you were right there around New York where they were getting all that. They're getting buried up there.
Yeah, they're a couple hundred miles from us near Buffalo in that region. No, we're here in southern New Hampshire near the Vermont border.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. You were in that area. We have had terrible snow and ice, and it's very unusual for Arkansas.
It's it's all part of these changes that are going on. And thanks to the internet and mass television, we can every evening get a quick review of what's going on in the United States and worldwide. And what we're seeing is something's going on with the weather.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how anybody can deny it anymore. It's like everything is changed and turned topsy-turvy, and it's not normal at all.
No, you and I, we go back, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and back then it was totally unheard of, some of the things that we were saying.
I know.
And of course...
That's what I was going to say. I think I've known you, I don't know if it is 15, 20 years, because you were just starting out, I think, when we were doing a conference together.
Yes, that was, I think it was out in Denver.
I was trying to remember whose show it was, but I know it was one of the first ones that I did, and I was scared to death, and you were doing a lot of talking to me, and you had just got established. I think you were just beginning.
Yeah, we began in the early 80s, but we were doing very quietly. I was doing a lot of clairvoyant medical work,
yeah,
and that's how I kind of got started, and then the other part of my work just kind of expanded, and I found that I couldn't serve everybody, so I chose a particular focus, in which was earth changes and how they're going to be affecting us and what
uh-huh.
we can do about them.
Well, I know I began in about 1990, and I think that's probably when I met you, and I think you were doing the psychic work at that time.
Yeah, I was. We did it for about 10 years. I did a little over 10,000 sessions, and pretty much burned out doing
them. I know that. You can get burned out very easily.
Yeah, so the timing for the change, I probably would not have changed on my own. It all happened because of a television show that turned my whole work around, and then it focused on it, and then everything changed. We had to.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes one thing. What show was that?
It was a series that NBC did called Ancient Prophecies.
Oh, I was on that.
Yeah, and I was on the. They did a pilot show for that that aired. It was on the first one. Then I was on. Actually, I was on all three of them.
Uh-huh.
That television. And at the time, some of the things that I was talking about on the first show happened, and so when the second show came around, there was even more interest.
Yeah, I was in the first and the second.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't film for the second one because they filmed enough footage out there that they just went ahead and used it.
Well, they created shows even afterwards, taking clips and pieces, which is very common.
Yeah, they do that a lot. People will tell me, I just saw you on a show somewhere, and I don't remember filming for it. But, you know, they do. They put it in their archives, and they sell it, and a lot of shows will pick it up.
Sure.
Uh-huh. But go back to the very beginning and say how did you get involved in the psychic work in the very beginning? Were you always psychic?
No. In fact, I was totally opposed to it. My background was electronics. Communications specifically, and so that's the field that I was in. And I had a health crisis, which put me into the hospital. And while nothing life threatening, but while I was there, I began in the hospital that night. I began to experience. I had my first out of body experience. I didn't know it was an out of body experience. I thought it was some kind of a reaction to drugs that they were giving me for my condition.
Yeah.
And that out-of-body experience, the next day, I asked them, I said, you know, what kind of drugs did you put in these IVs? And they said, well, you were dehydrated. It was a saline solution.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was like, oh, boy, you know, there really is a problem with me. And so, you know, for the next 6 months, I went through a whole series of explorations of trying to figure out, you know, what happened to me. Because now one day I was very linear person, and the next day I'm starting to see colors on people, and I'm starting to see visions, and I'm starting to experience all kinds of strange phenomena. Plus, my physical body was, was in rough shape.
But would you think would something happened that night when you went out of your body?
Yeah, I think what happened was that it was kind of like a signal, if you will. And I think we all have these things. I think in our life we have certain points or certain times, and I believe that they're governed by a combination of factors, but I think the main factor is an astrological one. You know, certain magnetic waves intersecting affect each of us in different ways, and some of us in very common ways. And when these things hit us, we go through a change. And when that change happens, it's kind of like a wake-up call. It says, okay, you know, what do you want to do? And in my case, my choice was go into denial. And so I spent the next year in denial and exploring various therapies to try to stop the stuff that was going on.
We never really want our lives to change. We get very comfortable.
Yeah, it was more fear for me because, you know, my background growing up was Catholicism, and
yeah.
I was a daily church goer,
yeah.
And I was the altar boy, and so this stuff's kind of smacked of, the devil.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And so I, after 6 or 7 months of this, I eventually ran across an individual who was a doctor, a psychiatrist, and he kind of approached me a little differently. He said, "Let's make a list of what you're experiencing." And he said, "And each week we'll discuss the next week what you think you saw or what you think you heard."
Yeah.
He says, "And we'll try to figure out what the problem is." And so the next week I go in for my session. And he calls me up the night before. He says, "I want you to take a look at the newspaper." He said, "Before you come to your session tomorrow." He said, "That's all I'm going to tell you." So I looked at the newspaper, and it didn't mean much to me. I mean, I read it and I went in and I said, "Well, what's the issue with the newspaper?" And he said, "Well, some of the things you told me last week are in the paper now."
Uh-huh.
And he said, "I think that, something going on." Now, he was a psychiatrist, but he was a Jungian-trained psychiatrist. He really believed in the universal mind, universal consciousness. He didn't necessarily believe in the psychic phenomena. He just believed that our mind had a lot more power than we realize.
And he was a lot more open. Anyway.
Yeah, and he followed Carl Jung very, very strongly. And so he approached that with me for the next 3 months. And at the end of the 3 months, he said, "There's nothing that I really can do for you." He says, "It just seems like these abilities have come to you." He says, "Your problem is you're going to decide what to do with them."
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I thanked him, and that ended our session. And by that time, I was not able to focus or do normal work. I was living off of my savings, and then I started literally selling off my assets to survive. And that led me to one day a knock on my door, and there's two people are at my door, and they're elderly gentlemen, but they're really dressed very well, probably in their, I think it was 50s or 60s, and they came in and they said, "We're looking for Gordon Michael Scallion." And I said, "Yes," and you know, my first impression was that they were part of some religious organization, and they wanted to talk about that. That was the impression I got just looking at them.
Yeah.
My judgment, misguided as it was. And I said, "How can I help you?" And they said, "Well, we were sent to see you by spirit." And I said, "Oh boy, here we go." And I would not let them in. I kept them at the door. And he said, "Look, spirit told us your address, told us your name." They said, "How else would we know this?" And they told us that you hadn't told anybody about this, not even your family, my experiences. And so finally, after about 5 minutes at the door, he said, "Look, I think I can help you, and you can probably help us." And I let them in, and we sat down, and he said, "You have this ability to look at the future and the past." He says, "You also have this ability to kind of see in people the colors on them and interpret what's wrong with them." And I said, "I don't think so." I said, "I don't think I have any."
At that point, then.
Yeah, I said, I don't think so. And he said, just look at my friend here," he said, and he says, "just let your mind go." And I said, "I'm not willing to do this." And I got up and I said, "I really think that this is not working out for me, this conversation." I said, I'm having a difficult time. It's been a rough, you know, year." And I said, "I'm not the one that can help you." And he puts his hand on my shoulder and he said, "Just look at him and just tell me the colors you see, because I know you see colors." And he kept pressing me, and I finally said something, and then he said, "Now what does that mean?" And I said, "It means Mercury." "Means Mercury?" He said, "The planet?" I said, "No, Mercury, the chemical."
Oh, okay.
And he said, "Thank you." And they turned around and they simply, you know, shook my hand and they left. There was no further conversation.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back a month or two later. And as it turns out, his friend that he brought with him was diagnosed with some kind of a disease and said he was going to die. And because they couldn't find out what the cause of it was, his health just kept sliding. He said, "I know you said Mercury." He says, "Can you be more specific?" And by that time, once he came there, I started seeing these visions of him. And I said, "Well, you know, it's kind of funny, because when you came, I started seeing pictures, and I didn't really know what they meant. I saw you as this man here, as a younger man, working with a white jacket on, and it looks like a laboratory making teeth." And he smiled, and he says, "I used to work in a dental lab."
Ah.
And I said, "Well, I think that working in that lab, unprotected, you got some kind of mercury poisoning." And
I was thinking about that with the feelings and everything.
And so he said, "What other visions?" And I told him another vision. I said, "I saw you making up this material," and I can't remember what it was now, but it was a series of herbs and something else, and I don't remember what it was, but it was some kind of a concoction anyways. And he wrote every single word down. And then I look at him and I said, "You know, you really need to, you know, whatever I'm saying, I don't know if it's real or not real." I said, "I'm really having a hard time. You really need to go see a doctor." And he put his hand back on my shoulder and he said, "I am a doctor." And maybe a month or two later, he comes back, knocks on my door, gives me a gift. I said, "What's this for?" He says, "We're going on a cruise." And it turned out it was his wife partner, and they were going on some kind of a cruise together. His partner was totally healed.
Ah.
And I said, "Well, you know, good luck." And he said, "You were right." And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, the body has a way of healing itself, I suppose." And, you know, I wasn't acknowledging it. Well, before he left, he went and told everybody in his church about this. And so people started coming. And sometimes we'd get up in the morning and we'd see four or five cars in the driveway at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, boy.
And so it was...
So it began.
It began there. And it continued on for probably 8 to 10 years until this media thing happened. And then... and it was a good thing it happened, because... quite possibly, you know, I was damaging myself and I knew it.
You mean by overworking? Or
well, at that time I was doing deep trance work, similar to what Edgar Cayce did.
That's what I was thinking. That's what ended up killing him.
Yeah, yeah. And I was doing 6 or 8 a day, and you know, you should only do like 2 or 3 a day. And, you know, I was just trying to keep my calendar clear, and it never would happen. So as it turned out, it was a blessing for me, because then so many other healers in the world, you know, started coming out in the woodwork. And it was right at that time when, you know, the New Age movement and the alternative health field really started to grow. And then
that's what I kept thinking. We were really ahead of our time.
Yes, yeah. And so that started, and then I began, you know, I found that, you know, publishing my insights, whether it be a map of the future or whether it be a tape on a lost civilization or a tape on alternative healing, you know, I started putting a whole series of lectures together and putting them on tapes, because then I figured, you know, one person could get a tape and they could then share that tape with their groups.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and then I did the lecture circuit, and then finally about 2 years ago, I decided that I just needed to really scale back and spend more time with my family and our grandchildren. So we stopped doing interviews for the most part, and we stopped doing any tours. You know, once a year I select 2 organizations that I want to support, and I tithe my, you know, anything I can add to help support them raise money or do it. And like this year I'll be doing the Edgar Cayce Foundation in May, and
yeah,
you know, last year it was another company. So I try to at least do a couple of a year, and yet still maintain some kind of a balance in my life.
I know there's a lot of the people I'm having on my show. You know, I'm having all the ones that I know. You know, we go back many years, and a lot of them have also stopped.
Mm-hmm.
They said they just don't want to do the touring and the lecturing anymore.
It's a grind. You know, the positive parts are that you get to see people and you get to interact with them and actually meet the people. So that's a real positive thing. The flip side of that is that if you're on the East Coast, you're going to the West Coast, you've got a day's travel both ways. That's 2 days of travel.
Mm-hmm.
Plus you've got, you know, a day there doing things, a day after, you know, signing books and do whatever you have to do. So it's a 4 or 5 days of your life for, you know, a 1 or 2 hour event.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then for me, it takes a time for my body to readjust to the time zones again, so I have to spend at least another day, you know, charging my batteries.
Well,
and,
you know,
I'm
traveling all over the world, and I'd be out of the country a month to 6 weeks, but I have to do that rather than coming back and making so many trips. I'd
sure.
rather do it while I'm over there.
Sure. Absolutely.
But I know the body, you know, it takes a few days to adjust when you get there, and then when you get back, it's the same thing. But I've cut back, but I'm not doing as much as I was, but I'm still out there anyway. But, you know, going back to what you said, when you got sick that time and you had the out-of-the-body experience, I'm finding in my work that a lot of people... you know what I mean when I'm talking about spirit. I call them they. You know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found in my work when I'm doing the hypnosis and everything that they may be going along, a businessman or something very practical, then all of a sudden something will happen in their life to turn them around. And I always tell them, if you're not doing what you're supposed to, they'll hit you up the side of the head. They'll get your attention. They'll make you turn around the way you're supposed to be going.
Yeah, I call it the 2x4 lumber effect, you know, getting hit in the head with a 2x4.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You'll hit you up the side of the head, because I've had people, I'm still doing a lot of therapy, and I have people come into my office. One man was on crutches, and he had been a multimillionaire, and they stopped him cold. He was paralyzed for a while to turn his life around. And you don't want to wait till it gets to that point. But now he had lost everything, but he was on the spiritual path. So they have strange ways of getting your attention anyway.
Yeah, and it's always the choice of the individual whether they want to, whether you're ready for a change. And they come in waves or cycles, you know.
Yeah.
If you're not quite ready this time, there may come another opportunity, and there may not. You know, I've been with many people who are just really stuck. I was one of those people, you know, really just stuck. And not able to, you know, to move forward. And then, you know, so the body has a way of getting your attention, you know, and classically
you had no idea you were going in this direction. And
oh, I did. This would have been the farthest thing from my mind, you know.
Yeah,
I never told anybody. I never told my family members, nothing. I mean, it was like, you know, it was an embarrassment for me, and it was, you know, I was in denial, and I was going through a lot of fear. And as time went on, I began to realize that the world of spiritualism and spirit is like this collective consciousness. You know, once you get a model of how it works, and so my problem was I had a lot of dogmatic training in my life, so I had to take a look at that. And what I found is I didn't have to give up my faith and my belief in a creator and how that worked and prophets, and I didn't have to give any of that up. I just had to understand a different level of how it works.
And that's what I tell people. You can have both. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that this answers a lot more of the questions that the church doesn't answer.
Yeah, you know, the out-of-body stuff, you know, was really helpful, because at first it was out-of-body just being here, or I could, you know, I could travel to your office, for example. You know, I could actually be there, and you could write something on the chalkboard, and I could tell you what it was. You know, so if we had that agreement, you know, I could enter a certain state, and we could do that. And I used to experiment with people, or if people couldn't come to me for a session, I would go to them.
Uh-huh.
And then I learned that you can also travel further. So then I, you know, was able to travel out of body and go to, you know, what's called the astral realms, the lower realms, and the various levels, and I found that there's 7 of these layers of consciousness of the earth.
Yeah.
And I've been able to travel all the way up to the 5th one. I have not been able to go past the 5th one, but I've been able to go up to that 5th level, and you know, it's like magic.
That's what I have found, that you can only go as far as your vibrations will be compatible.
Yeah, it'll take me you know, many more lives to tweak up my body to go further, but at least in this life, I've been able to go far.
If you're not developed enough or ready enough, you can't exceed the level that you're compatible with.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering, do you know Aaron Abramson?
Sure.
Okay, I was with him this last weekend at the iNest, and you know, I published some of his books, but he was, I gave a lecture down there while we were there, and he was talking about how he just found out he could do that. Go into and read the Akashic Records, and he did that for many years. He said he did over 8,000 readings that way.
He did. He did. And I've spent time with Aaron, and you know, so we've you know, we still communicate. And
well, he's not doing it anymore because he had a stroke.
Right. He's been you know, he's been doing other things, but he's you know, he's just starting to do like this is his first lecture that he's actually done in a long time.
Oh, I know, but he was so excited getting to sign the books. He said he was so happy to be back because he had been out of it for so long.
Right.
But so I know these things are real, and the same way, he just came into it by accident also. But he stopped doing readings, but mostly because he is getting quite elderly. So it sounds like the same way, you were going out of the body to the same realms that he was visiting.
Yeah, our styles were somewhat different.
Yeah,
it was, you know, it's the same bottle, so to speak. You know, he would enter a higher state of consciousness, not necessarily a trance state.
Yeah.
And then the higher state of consciousness, he could transverse, you know, travel places, do things, and answer questions. You know, there was back in the 80s, there were many books written about his work.
Yes.
We are the Jeffrey
Goodman
book.
That's why I was very
book.
Honored to have him as an author. Mm-hmm. Even though he can't do the lecturing, I thought he has that reputation.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the younger people don't know these people that have been around for a long time. They're more or less like the pioneers, which you are. You're one of the pioneers.
Yeah, well, I'm the Johnny Come Lately, really. You know, the real pioneer was Casey. I mean, he's the guy that really made it possible for us to even think about doing it.
Oh, yes, I know what you mean. But anyway, I don't blame you for after a while then getting burned out and getting tired of doing all the readings. That's when you decided to stop the personal readings, is that right?
Well, I would have kept going probably if it hadn't been for the media exposure. you know, the media exposure, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we might get, 20 phone calls a day as an average, and all of a sudden we were getting, more than 1,000 calls a day. So, we had 17 operators, working two shifts, taking calls, and, it just became, a business, and that's nothing that I ever wanted. I never wanted it to be a business, but it became that, and so something had to give, and I no longer could do it because there was always some media truck or just people showing up constantly, and so...
That's to me, too, when the people come, they're coming to me from all over the world, and it's like they need help, and how do you say no? That's the problem.
Yep, it is a tough thing, and for me it was that... if people came, I had created these series of these tapes, and then I would say, take this tape and see how it works out for you.
Yeah.
And at that time, I had a list of other people that I could refer them to, and so I had a list, and
they don't understand that we're just one person.
Right.
We can't do everything because we are human.
Mm-hmm.
But, everybody, once they all have their own stories, and it is hard to say, no, I don't want to help you. But I'm glad I live in the middle of nowhere on top of a mountain, which you do too, don't you?
I do. We're up here.
You're out in the middle of nowhere.
We're in the hills of New Hampshire. We're at least 2 hours from any major city.
Yeah.
And we're self-sufficient, totally. I mean, if the power grid went out, we still keep on. And, because I'm... because of my electronics background, I've been able to wire this place. I have my own studio,
mm-hmm.
So I can produce audio or video programs, and then I can distribute them right from here through the internet.
I'm not totally self-efficient, but we do have fireplaces, and we have the power go out, so we know how to take care of ourselves, and we keep food on hand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only like a mile to the nearest neighbor, and the city is about, an hour away. But, when you're traveling, you're with all that energy of the people and the traffic and the big cities that I can't hardly wait just to get out of there and get back to my mountaintop. I said, I come back here to recharge my batteries.
One of the producers for, I think it was CBS who did a series on me, and they came out and they called it Scallion's Retreat. And I said, this is not a retreat. This is my home. They said, well, how do you get any work done out here? There's nothing. There's no lights you can see at night. There's nothing but stars. I mean, how do you? They just could not fathom how I could possibly live there.
Yeah, but I have woods all around the house. There's deer in the front yard. It's just very peaceful, and I think we need that.
Well, for me, it was, I got here because of a series of visions that mm-hmm. directed me to be here. And, it actually showed me a map and the directions and how to get to this specific place. And I was told the reason that I had to be here. It was an earth energy reason. And I came up here and I said, there's no way that I'm going to be here because I really want to be warm and I'm heading south. And so I went down to Florida and we spent, a couple of weeks and nothing materialized. I mean, every deal, any time I found a house or found, nothing worked out for me after 2 weeks. And so we came back home, and then I had another dream, and the dream now showed the same map with a big red flashing arrow, and then this voice that sounded like Moses, it said,
uh-huh.
It says, you need to go here. And I sprung up in the middle of the night, for this dream, and I said, wow. And then I was totally wide awake, and then it was lucid. I kept going. And I said, well, I'm going to get up and go get some water, and it'll stop. And so as I walked into the kitchen, it continued. So it was like I'm walking down the hallway, but I'm still seeing this vision of this map, and I'm still listening to this voice. And so it said, go here, and you'll find 11 miles from this location, you'll find the place you need to be. So I went there, and I went 11 miles, and sure enough, there was this little sign by the side of the road for sale. We went down, and the next day we bought it, and everything else since then has been history. That's how it all worked out. And since then, other family members have moved up here, and they love it now, and they're raising their children here.
Well, we got a lot in common. I've got two of my daughters that have built on my land now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not like we're totally isolated from family anyway. But anyway, that's I do remember, well, let's see, I'm trying to think. We did a conference. It was with Annie Kirkwood, and I was there in person. This has been several years ago. She didn't do very many conferences of her own that she put on. And you were there via television.
Right.
And she said, that's when she was saying you had your own studio in your home, and they were doing with the satellite hookup. So you were, they had on the big screens, everybody could hear you, and they were asking you questions.
Right.
That's been quite a while ago now.
That was quite a while ago. And in fact, I still do things like that. It's, you know, if it's really important for, you know, for some organization,
yeah,
to do that, you know, I can easily do it. I can stream live video. I can either do it through satellite or I can do it through the internet, and I have both options now.
Yeah, so I was thinking, because you can only be on the air, he said we could only do it for so long because the satellite would move, and you had to just do it for an hour or something, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have a studio in your home, don't you?
We have a secondary building. I have to walk about 300 feet. And 300 feet from our home, there's another 5,000 square foot building, and in that building we have a videography room. It's all hooked up with lights, ready to go any time you want it. And then I have a couple of audio recording rooms with an editing suite.
Where you do your radio show too,
right,
isn't it?
And that's where I am right now.
Because you were telling me it was absolutely soundproof.
It is. It's totally. I mean, I can have lawn people outside or trucks, and you can't hear a thing. The building was already here when I bought the property. It was a post and beam barn, and I renovated the barn and made it studios, and I made it offices for Cynthia and I, and our assistants. So you know, we do that, and then everything else is kind of jobbed out someplace else. You know, we don't manufacture anything here. You know,
uh-huh.
A printer does the printing.
Oh, we have more and more in common than you think.
Yeah.
I only have to walk about 300 feet to get to my publishing office.
Sure,
it's on the same property too.
Yeah, well, it's my little contribution to the oil crisis. You know.
Well, you know, it shows you don't have to have a storefront to do these kind of things. Not anymore.
No, you know, anybody with a computer and an internet connection, you know, can get their message out. If they have some kind of a message they want to do, you can do it very inexpensively, like with a blog or anything, and you know, tell people,
yeah,
what you're doing. So it's, if anything, today we are saturated with information. You know, the information age has exploded, and it's now literally choking on itself.
Oh yeah, instantaneous information now.
Yeah. But you know, this age that we're in now, this information age, is changing, and the new age that I predict that's coming, which I call the intuitive age, that's just around the corner, and we're going to see a whole different way that we communicate, and it's going to be because we as a race of people on this planet are becoming more and more intuitive, more and more telepathic. So where there was just a few, you know, a century ago or half a century ago, there's now tens of thousands of intuitives in the world, and they're working in different disciplines. You know, I used to work with doctors all the time, and I found that so many of those doctors were highly intuitive. You know, and
well,
the same thing with
business. I'm finding in my work too that I'm dealing on up right now in my books with the new earth, the changing of the frequencies and the vibrations to raise the new earth into a new dimension. I don't know if you're getting that information or not.
Well, in my book,
maybe you call it something else.
Yeah, in my book, Notes from the Cosmos, I describe what it will look like in the future.
Yeah.
And the future was the 21st century. It really begins in the 21st century. And basically, what I see is that the Earth grid, the Earth itself, is a sentient being, and the Earth has power points around the Earth. And the ancients built their temples on these power points, such as the Great Pyramids or Stonehenge in various places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, that grid pattern is changing. It's actually, when I am flying and I look down at the Earth, I can see a new pattern emerging. It's not the same pattern as it was. It's like a super impressed pattern. And I interpret that to mean that the Earth itself is going to literally double in its vibratory force.
Yes, and that's why, you know, what I'm finding in my work, this is affecting people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was getting at, that our vibrations and frequencies are also changing and being speeded up. This could account for a lot of more of this intuitive abilities that you were talking about.
And it is, and it's also the fact that, you know, there's a system now called, or a disease now called fibromyalgia, and it's a nerve network problem. So what we're seeing now is a lot more people having electrical problems with their bodies.
Yes, I see.
And that's because, you know, if you're not in harmony with you know, your environment, your body goes astray, and that's governed by what we eat, you know, our food supply, and it's also governed by our thoughts, how we think.
Yeah.
And now we will naturally adjust, just like an animal would naturally adjust to any changes in the earth. You know, if it gets colder, animals get thicker fur. You know, we would change too. If all of a sudden this planet slowly got colder and colder and colder, we would grow more hair. We would adjust, and it might take several generations before we were able to have a consistent adjustment. But we do. We adjust to it. If we don't adjust to it mentally now, then we find we have all these problems, and that's why we're seeing so many people scattered, and we're seeing violence with children. We're seeing a lot of things that we never saw before.
Well, see, that's what I'm getting in my work. They said that the frequency and the vibration of the human body cannot change instantly to adjust to what's happening to the earth. It'd be like blowing a fuse. So it has to happen gradually, and as it does, we do have physical effects from it. And I've had a lot of people are going to doctors. The doctors don't know what's wrong with them. And all it is adjusting to these new energies.
Well, there's a...
It's physical symptoms.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, too. I mean,
there is.
You know, the biggest, one of the largest problems that I'm seeing right now has to do with diet. You know, we've moved
into this. Definitely. That's what I'm getting in my work, too. They're saying get away from the heavy foods.
It's a processed foods, you know, and it's the things that, you know, Cynthia has been warning about this for over 15 years. She says we're going to get to a point where you're just going to see people are going to, you know, the processed foods and fried foods are going to be so severe that bodies are going to actually change.
Yeah.
And, of course, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, loves to support, you know, disease with more chemistry, where the issue is get the proper diet and exercise going, you know, in conjunction with the right attitude, and then your body will do the normal things it needs to do. I mean, we're naturally intuitive unless we shut it down.
Mm-hmm. And the body will adapt, as you said.
Yep. And
that's what I'm trying to, my clients that come to see me, they come for medical problems, and I'm trying to steer them over toward the natural, the alternative,
mm-hmm.
the homeopaths, naturopaths, and I think we're having a lot more results with that. Working with, you know, what we need for our body instead of drugs and medication.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you agree with me or not, because I think the medications just like Band-Aids. They don't really get to the cause of the problem.
Well, you know, there's a wide range of pharmaceuticals, and some of them have been godsends. They really are.
Yeah.
A lot of them are. They don't go to the source of the problem. You know, now we have this huge obesity problem, and so we have all these drugs coming out that are trying to reduce your fat intake, you know, and you know, the answer is that we're living on sugar water, you know, and you know, a can of Coke is a dozen teaspoons of sugar, you know, and you have two or three of those a day, and you can see how much that we're putting into our bodies. And
Yep. And
so some pharmaceuticals I believe are good, and they provide a good service. I think a lot of them are just not so much a Band-Aid. It's just that they help you cope with a problem, but it won't cure it. You know, you can't patent diet. You know, you can patent a pill that will supposedly help your diet, but you can't patent a diet. So if you're a big conglomerate, you want products that you can patent,
uh-huh.
get a license for, and then charge, you know, a couple $100 a pill.
I know. But, see, I'm watching my clock here, too. There's a lot of things I want to ask you before
Sure.
we...
Sure, go ahead.
You see, you still have what is called, you call the Matrix Institute, don't you?
Yes, that's the one we started with. It's the one we still have, yep.
Now, why don't you tell us what you're involved in right now? You have written books. They're still out there, aren't
mm-hmm.
they?
Yeah. I'm into...
And, you know, what your company is focusing on right now? Or are you?
Yeah, we are. We haven't... it really hasn't changed much. We now publish... And I would say 50% of what we do is distributed through the internet, and it's on demand lectures where you can go to our website and pick a subject and listen to one of my lectures or one of Cynthia's lectures. You can get a CD of it if you don't want to, you know, download it. You can actually own it. You can, and then we publish. We have a membership, and people who join the membership get special pricing, so we can share the discounts with all of our members. Members get our journal, and the journal contains my predictions for the coming quarter. So each quarter, I list.
You used to have it. You're still publishing the newsletter then.
It's a journal now, yeah.
Okay.
It's become a full-color journal. And so that contains all of my predictions, and then I update those predictions on my, I have a member's blog where members can log in, and then as a prediction is unfolding or changing or something comes up, I will update it. So people will be updated constantly. So the use of a combination of getting a print journal in the mail and also the internet, if they so choose. And then we still publish our Earth Changes maps. That's now in its 12th printing.
12th printing?
Yeah. And so that's still takes up a goodly amount of our staff's time as, you know, handling those things. And we do a twice monthly internet radio show similar to what you're doing, but ours is a little different. They're not interviews. They're basically little mini lectures that we provide mm-hmm. for people who don't have a lot of time and they just would like to get a sense on something. Like right now, this week, we're talking about the Earth grid, the one you and I just got through talking about, the vibration of it.
Yeah, because when I don't have a guest, then I just talk. I just lecture, too, so
sure.
I know what you mean.
Sure. But so we do these little mini lectures on the website, and people can listen. They're,
yeah.
they're only about 10 minutes long.
Oh.
And then if they want... You know, and those are free, and it gives people a chance to discover what we're about and who we are, and
uh-huh.
and then if they want to explore more, they can explore it through my book or through our membership. And
well, then in the journal, are you still giving predictions?
Yes, we are. We do several categories. I do economic categories, so
uh-huh.
so each quarter I will upgrade my economic. I also do Earth Changes, talk about, you know, what I see or don't see happening. And then that breaks down into weather and earthquake and volcanic activity. I do another one on spirituality, which kind of talks about where our society is going. You know, what kind of things is happening in the future. Now, some of these predictions are geared for a year out. Usually I'm 1 to 5 years out in a prediction. As we get closer to an event time, then I update it more frequently. So, for example, right now, one of my predictions is that I published 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I said oil was like $23 a barrel, and I said oil is going to jump up to $50 a barrel, create a scare. It's then going to go up the next wave. It'll take it up over $70 a barrel. It'll pull back, and then after it pulls back, it'll kind of stay there. And we were going to see oil that's going to be in the $2 to $3 range for a while until we get into somewhere around 2008,
uh-huh.
in which time it's going to go sky high.
Well, that was totally accurate then.
So far. We'll see if it goes sky high in the next year or so. World events, I think, will cause it to really go out of sight.
You know, that's what I work with. You know, it was always the probabilities and possibilities. We can always go a different path because we come to these crossroads. You know, things can change.
Sure.
Because people do have free will anyway.
They can change, and oftentimes the timeline can change. We see an event, and the event can happen earlier. I remember when I saw Hurricane Andrew, you know, and I said, I said, we're gonna see this hurricane in Florida. It's gonna be the worst hurricane ever, and it's gonna come across from the Bahamas, and it's gonna slam into Florida and it's Dade County, and it's gonna be $25 billion. Well, we've never had anything like that. And when I first got that, it looked like it was gonna be a year away.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I'm gonna publish it anyway. I said, watch out in the next week or so, but I think it's gonna be a year away. I said, but the next week, it's possible it could happen. Well, within 7 days, it did happen. So sometimes in the timeline, it's hard to get that, because when you're traveling out of body, there is no time.
The first books that I did were the ones about Nostradamus,
mm-hmm.
and I still keep getting letters. They'll say, but the dates are wrong, but the events are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult, for any psychic to put a date on anything.
Well, I pretty much have stopped doing that directly because it isn't fair to anybody to hang on to it. You know, people want to know. They want to know when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Or I'll get letters saying, "Will you call me the day before? Or send me a fax the day before something's going to happen."
But, a lot of times, you're better off if they don't know what's going to happen.
And I said, these are things that we see, and you've got to learn to trust your own intuition as to whether you think they're going to happen or not happen. Right now, we've got the planet itself is going through this massive change. We see, everybody's talking about global warming. Now, before it was an argument that there was no global warming.
Yeah,
and now the argument is what's really causing the global warming. So consciousness has changed from one point of view to now to an acceptance. And that's the way consciousness goes. Everybody, it's like with aliens, there's a denialability of that there's people from outer space, and once we have some credible evidence that it occurred, then more people will say, okay, now why are they here or where are they from? So we adjust our consciousness to accept reality.
Then it just changes the way they look at things.
Yeah.
But I know you're probably get the same thing. When my books first came out, we get calls and people say, should I move? Where should I move to? Where's the safe place? And I said, that puts too much responsibility on me. I said, you have to trust your own instincts.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably still getting that, aren't you?
We get that. There isn't a day that goes by that we don't get correspondence for that. And our response is always the same. As a futurist, I see trends. And the word is trends. These are patterns.
Yeah.
And what I try to do is I try to be responsible by saying, look for these things to happen as an early warning sign. If you see this happening, then there might be some validity to the next stage happening.
Yeah.
And that way you can look for it. So if you see a bunch of things happening, like the pattern that I said in the 80s, in 82, I said, this is the pattern that I see. Weather will become erratic. We'll start to have a melt-off at the poles.
Yeah.
We're going to see temperature of the planet increase by at least a degree by the year 2000.
Mm.
We're going to see a change in the sun. We're going to see sunspot cycles that will just roll to the next one. Instead of being 11 years, we're going to see double sunspot cycles, and we're going to see flares larger than we ever had before. Initially, it'll knock out some satellites. Later on, they'll learn how to protect the satellites. And then we'll start seeing more phenomena. And the phenomena will be all kinds of things in what I would call the mental plane. We're going to start seeing children who are incredibly psychic at birth. They're gifted, unbelievable. I call them children of the Blu-ray. And, I wrote about it in 1982, that these children would come into the world and what they would do. And all of these are signs to get us ready for this new race of people on this planet, which I call, again, the intuitive age, the intuitive society.
Yes, I've written about those and lectured about them also.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of them are called the indigo children, but then they said the indigo, that's not a good name for them. It's really just the whole race of children that are being born right now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, the teachers, I've spoken at conferences where the teachers want to know how should they handle these children. Well, I was told you should give them challenges.
Well, it's no different than any other children. I mean, in any classroom, you're always going to have some that are exceptional, some that are quiet.
Yeah.
You're going to have that mixture. And, you know, the quality of our teachers is what makes the difference. And that's something that we as a society have not supported as much as we should have.
They're usually overworked with too large of classrooms.
It's like in our world, or at least in our country, the things that are most valuable we give the least amount of support for, like the arts, education. You know, we don't pay them as much. We demand more from them. But in the corporate world, you know, we'll pay a corporate executive $50 million or $100 million or a bonus of $200 million. And we'll pay these incredible fees, or we'll spend, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars for a senseless war. You know, we have money for all of those things, but we don't have money to where we should put it, which is in our communities and in our schools, our teachers, and our support system and healthcare. Those are the things that are coming. I do make a prediction that this will come, but it's not going to come soon. It'll be a decade away before we see these changes, and those changes will come as a result of the Earth going through several more eruptions that are coming.
Well, I'm not going to let you get off of here without asking you, what do you think about the war?
I think
President Bush and everything.
Yeah, I pretty much summed it up there. But you know, my predictions before Bush, back even before Clinton, was that there would be two major wars in Iraq, and that after the second attack by the United States towards Iraq, the Middle East would erupt, and there would be a nuclear exchange.
That's in my books also.
That's coming in the next 5 years. You know, if I can believe the timeline. Again, I caution on any kind of a timeline. But you know, since the two things have already occurred, you know, since we've had, you know, Bush one going in, Bush two going in, so those two things have occurred. And then the conflict, and then, you know, my prediction went on to say, if the Palestinians don't get their state, then that sets up the next phase of a holy war. And this kind of fulfills biblical prophecies, too. So right now, the holy war that everybody talks about that's coming is already here, and it's been here for quite a while. You know, it's like everything else. You don't realize things until you're...
15 years. And I was told, though, in my work, if you could get people to focusing on the opposite, you could create it with our minds.
It's possible, but there's also another thing that goes on. You know, some of these ancient prophecies, you know, even Revelation. You know, if we look at some biblical prophecies or any other culture, you know, there's thousands of years of karma that's in certain sections. You know, and the Middle East in particular. You know, that land has changed hands so many times, and there's so much hatred. Sometimes that hatred has to go through a cleansing process. And, you know, one of the elements, fire or water, comes in to cleanse it so that you can then, you know, build anew. And I'm afraid that that's what is going to happen. You know, I'm always hopeful that some major master comes into the world and goes there, and like a Gandhi kind of a person.
Well, you know, in my books, we call him the great genius.
Yeah, and just brings about all these changes. And I'm always hopeful of that.
Well, what do you think if Bush has gotten out of power? Do you think that'll make a difference?
No, I don't think so.
You think somebody else will just continue what's going on?
Yeah, I think that enough things have been set into motion before he's out of office, that it'll be hard to turn it around. You know, right now we're talking about stopping the war. Well, they really aren't going to stop the war.
You can't stop it. It's just cold.
You know, and they're not going to deny funds for it. So it's going to continue. They're not going to be able to, you know, in April you're going to hear that that somehow there's been a quieting in the country, that there's some kind of a new chance. You're going to hear that. It's going to sound hopeful, but you know, when you get into the fall, the whole thing is going to erupt again, and then that's when Iran and Israel, you know, start to.
But I've been in my work that they'll all get involved eventually, which I know people don't want to hear that. But
Right. Well,
we're coming down. You know, an hour has evaporated on us here.
Goes by quick, doesn't it?
Coming down to the end. Tell people how they can get in touch with you, with your organization.
Well, the easiest way is if you have internet connection, just go to my website, which is matrixinstitute.com. You can also get there from earthchanges.com. And everything that we do, you'll find there. And if not, you can always call. Right now, I'm giving my book for free. If you just pay a $6.95 shipping charge, and you can get my book for free. I decided last year that I would publish 10,000 books and just give them away so that people could, you know, maybe help a few people on their path. And they can get that by calling 1-800-628-7493. 1-800-628-7493, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 4 Eastern Time.
What's the name of the book?
Notes from the Cosmos.
Oh, okay. So they can get the book free. They just pay the shipping.
Correct.
If they contact you, and they'll be able to get a hold of you on
right.
your website.
And if they go to the website, that book is on the is right on the front page of my website, and you can just see it there, and they can just order it right through our store.
That's really wonderful, Gordon. I think you're doing tremendous work.
It seems that, you know, as we move closer to changes, you know, it becomes more imperative, for me at least, to do whatever I can do.
Okay.
You know, and so this is a, you know, this is a small thing, I realize, but it's, at least it's something that I can do.
Okay, I know we're going to have to go because Don will pull the plug on us here, but I really want to thank you for coming on this show because you said you don't do this much anymore.
No, I do Art Bell once a year. I just did him last week, and I take care of my old friends like you. I don't mean old elderly, but old as in
we're not old.
As we've been here for, you know.
Well, it was a great honor to have you on, and I know people are going to really enjoy this.
Good.
So
well, I'm happy to help you.
Thanks again for coming on.
You bet.